Hi, Dimitri. I still wait for Mekidis, so quarter past nine in Rochester, so
where is he calling from?
Rochester, New York. So it's 6 hours behind us. Here you are. Ah, I cannot hear you. Ah, okay. Now.
Okay.
Hello. Okay, nice.
How are you?
Good, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, yeah.
You're doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Okay.
Sorry, I was a couple of minutes late.
Yeah, it's still very early, isn't it?
Maintenance going on here.
Okay, okay, right. Yes. You look good?
No, I'm okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. You enjoy US?
Yeah. So far, it's okay. I've been working all the time. I mean, as soon as I come here, I start giving classes, so...
Okay, yeah.
But so far, it's good. I mean, summer and now autumn, and so very beautiful.
Right. All the beautiful colors on the trees.
Exactly,
nice,
yeah.
Okay, yeah. Good. I'm in KU113, so...
Okay.
You see a couple of students. Half of them have left. They sit in the canteen and probably at home or, anywhere.
Okay.
At our place, it's 3:15 Friday afternoon. So, but I try to put you up on the big screen now. Dimitri, is the sound okay?
Yes, everything's okay.
Okay, so then it should be possible. Should be possible for you, Makidis, to share your slides.
Yes, I will. No, I don't
know. Okay.
Yeah. Is it okay?
Yes. Can you use the presenter mode, perhaps?
Yes, sure.
So then the slides are getting a little bit bigger. Yes,
yeah.
Now it looks perfect. Sound is also good. Yes, then we can start. Very nice to meet you again, Makidis. So we have a new cohort of COSI students. I think we are about 16, 17, 18 COSI students. And then there are a number of other students who taking that course as an elective course. So if you could just start to present yourself, because I think approximately 10 years ago you were in the same shoes as the students here in the CMET program, and then you can just start telling a little bit about your journey before you give the introduction to high dynamic range imaging. The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, Peter. As Peter said, I was a student of a CMET cohort, which is basically before the COSI cohort. So then after that, I did my PhD in France, technical, in the high dynamic range domain. And then after that, I have worked back in Ethiopia as a computer science lecturer. And then I came back to Jobbik again to work as a researcher. So I have stayed for 5 years or so. And then I found another job here at RIT in Moons and Calendar Science Laboratory, Rochester, USA. So here I teach also, I do research by the side. So mainly my field is high dynamic range imaging, but I also do computer vision image processing, kind of related researches also. So you can hear me very well, right?
Yeah, it's okay. You are on my laptop speaker. I don't remember how I get these the room speakers to work. It's a long time ago since I used these ones. I found a cable, but I do not have the proper adapter, probably. So, no, not this one. I have plenty of adapters, but none for the speaker.
Okay.
So, but is it okay somehow?
Yeah.
I can try to make it a little bit louder. Okay, can you talk?
Okay, I mean maybe.
Okay, sound is good now.
The sound is good. Okay.
Yeah. Good.
I'll try maybe to be louder.
No, that's...
I don't know, but at the end of the day, what matters is the audio in your site, so...
Yeah. No, now it's fine. Now, please go
ahead.
No, it's
fine. Look.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good?
Okay, good. So,
yes.
You can... when the time is... up, you should tell me, Peter, because I don't have any clock here.
Sure. Or when we need a break, I will tell you. So just go ahead.
Okay. And also for the students, if you have any question, you can write it on the chat and I will try to reply to it while presenting.
Okay, good.
Okay. Okay, so today Peter asked me to give an introduction for high dynamic range imaging. So I will try to give basically a high level introduction for each stage of the imaging pipeline for only focusing on high dynamic range imaging. So to start with, I will start with some basic definitions of what we mean by dynamic range. So when we talk about dynamic range, so mainly we are talking about luminance. But what is luminance? So luminance is actually a measurement of brightness of light. It could be from a light source or it could be from illuminated surface. So we can measure light in radiometric measurement techniques. And then we have different radiometric quantities while we measure the light from the source or reflected or transmitted through a surface. So I don't know if you can see the pointer. Let me.
Close
it.
No, not yet. Yeah, there is a mouse. So yeah, now the mouse is there. The cursor, we see a cursor, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so. Can you see the spotlight?
Yes,
yeah,
now it's there.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
It's
right.
A bit slow, so it should use a pointer. So, so the radiometric measurement of the energy of the light is measured as a radiant power. The energy of the light per second, that would be joules per second for radiant power. But then the same radiant power in one specific solid angle is mentioned or termed as radiant intensity. And also per square meter on the surface or square meter of the light source, it is called irradiance. But though the equivalence of these radiometric measurements, which are basically the light sensed by our eyes, is a function of V lambda, if you know it from color science, which is a luminous efficiency function, which is basically the sensitivity of our eye for light. So they should be integrated by that to have the photometric measurement equivalence of those light measurements. So luminance is actually a measurement of that radiant energy per unit solid angle per unit area. So it could be on the surface or on the light source, from the light source. So the measure, the unit is candela per meter square, but in industry you might hear that people use nits than candela per meter square. So if we define luminance like that, then what we mean by a dynamic range? So the term dynamic range is a bit, people argue when it comes to the definition of dynamic range, but mostly for our application, we will be considering it as a ratio between the maximum possible luminance value or luminance intensity, which could be attainable or reproducible by a digital imaging system, by the minimum attainable possible luminance value of that particular device. So if we are considering, let's say, a display screen, then if you have seen the specifications when you buy television screens or laptop screens, you would see the dynamic range provided as a contrast ratio. That means the peak luminance of the screen divided by the black level of the screen, which is L-min. But in the camera side, you can also see it specified as an f-stops, the possible exposure range. So this will show possible exposure range in the camera. And also, many people, mainly in the academic area, they use order of magnitude. That means they, when they say, let's say, three order of magnitude, that means it's actually a ratio, specific logarithmic difference. It's a ratio specified in terms of this logarithmic difference. So, for example, if my screen has a black level of zero, which means L mean will be 10 to the power of black level of one, let's say, it will be 10 to the power of zero. And if the peak luminance is 1,000 candela per meter square, so we can specify that as 10 to the power of 3. So if I can write. Yeah, so 10 to the power of 3, log of 10 to the power of 3 to the 10 base will be 3. This one is 10 to the power of 1. So 1, so 3 minus 1 will be 2. So this is like, this is usually specified for this display, then we have a magnitude of 2. So if the person says this screen has a dynamic range of order of magnitude 2, that means the dynamic range is actually, it might not be exactly 10 to the power of 3 to 10 to the power of 1, but you know, the range is into magnitude order. So I just want to clarify this formula here. So, but one important point that you need to note in this case is that whenever we refer, especially in high dynamic range imaging, whenever we refer as a dynamic range, so we mean that the luminance ratio, so that luminance should be the physical the physical luminance measurement. It's not like a digital values ratio. So I will explain that more later, but you should remember this. So in Actually, in the real world, we have a very wide range of luminance range. So from the very dark night up to the very bright day. So the human visual system, we kind of can see on this wide range of luminance labels. So we can clearly see at night, as long as we have a little bit of moonlight or starlight, we can also see the same without any problem in the bright light, bright daylight. But, you know, if we stare directly to the light, that will be really high luminance value. So it's painful and also dangerous for our eyes. So that would put the, you know, the limit for the maximum maximum luminance that our eye can see. So, but at a particular given time, the visual system cannot see the whole range. So the steady state dynamic range of our human vision is actually very limited into 3 to 4 order of magnitude. But how are we then, can we see in this huge range? That is because of adaptation. So with the light and dark adaptation, this steady state visual sensitivity can move towards the right or towards the left based on our viewing condition. So one example usually given in color imaging, I mean in color science, is that when we move into the movie theater while the movie is playing, so it would be very dark. So our eye will take a little bit of time to adapt in that condition. So this sensation will be moving to the darker side. So that means more of like dark adaptation is happening in there. But if we move out of from the dark room to more bright room or outdoor, then we will start adapting to the bright condition again. So that's basically light adaptation. So light adaptation is much faster than the dark adaptation. But all together, we can actually operate in a very wide range of dynamic range. But then digital devices, both in the camera side and also in the rendering side for screens or printers, their dynamic range compared to the human vision is limited. But how can we say that one device is low dynamic range, or how can we say that this device is high dynamic range? So right now, currently, there is no clear threshold which says that if the luminance ratio is 500, then this is high dynamic range. So there is no rule or standard at the moment which actually give us this kind of threshold. So, but by convention, usually, so far, the standards of the, let's say, the content creation or streaming, as well as broadcasting standards, have been lower than 2 order of magnitude. So in the standards, the luminance range is for display screens, it's 100 candela per meter square for movies. If I have it here, I will show you. Yeah. And for projectors, which is in the cinema projectors, the maximum was set 48 candela per meter square. That is according to like BT709. The older standard, I mean, previous standards, the conventional standard, which is still works mostly. So by convention, we can call this a standard dynamic range or low dynamic range. But anything more than that could be considered high dynamic range. But as I told you, mostly people will start calling something, for example, the display screen HDR right now, even in the consumer market. So they will start calling the screen it supports HDR, basically it provides a peak luminance greater than 1,000 candela per meter square, which is greater than 3 orders of magnitude. But you should remember that there is no standard saying that this is HDR, this is LDR range. So just to give an example here, I have some examples of raw responses of up to 4 luminance, I mean 4 mobile phone cameras on different exposure time. So you can see that when we decrease the exposure time, the signals we are getting or registering in the sensor are really low. So the resulted image will be dark, we will see later. But when we have a longer exposure time, that means more light can pass through the lens and then actually collected on the sensor. So we will have more signals, higher signals. But if the exposure times increases, then the signals, I mean, the sensors start saturated. It starts to be saturated. So even if after that, even if we increase, you know, the exposure time more, it's useless because no data is being recorded. So everything after that will be discarded on this particular sensor, which is on the Huawei Mate mobile phone camera. But if we do the same thing for DSLR camera, which has much better and bigger sensor with high sensitivity, you can see here even up to 1 second, it's the same scene for both cases. Up to 1 second, the sensor is still not saturated. So we can increase the exposure more and we can still collect more data from the scene. But in this case, at 0.25 seconds, it's already saturated. So this can actually give a good example of what we mean by dynamic range of a camera, for example. So over the years, the dynamic range of the different devices have actually evolved. So at the moment, we have very high-end movie cameras or even DSLR, as I showed you in this. And also, even for personal use, very well affordable cameras or even mobile phone cameras nowadays have HDR capabilities. When we come to a display side, the same thing is observed. Commercially available TV screens at the moment, most of them are starting supporting HDR contents as well. So with the peak luminances, usually the commercial ones are with greater than 1,000 candela per meter square. So with actually devices evolution, the standard organizations are also being forced, or they also wanted to change with the technological evolution. So they have been proposing new standards for new types of contents. So EWOS 709B4, which is for HD content and for sRGB gamma mode, sRGB color space. As I told you here, the peak luminance recommended was really low because at that time the devices were only capable of doing that. But then there was BT2020, which is for ultra HD, because, you know, the resolution of many devices have been evolved a lot before dynamic range. So because of that, there was a need for ultra HD standard, which we will see later, mostly similar with this one, but except the resolution and the color space was changed into more wider color space than just sRGB. But recently we have a BT2100, which is for HDR, basically for HDR content purposes, for HDR broadcasting and streaming purpose. So it has HDR recommendations in there. So we will see later what it contains in, isn't it?
I do have a comment, Mekidis. Yes. Can you go back to the previous slide? Just would like to to mention that 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, Giorgio, have you met Giorgio Trumpi?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay. He measured the primaries of the Jøvik cinema.
Yes.
And then we calculated the XYZ. And in terms of the luminance, I think we ended up with 70 candela per square meters at the Jøvik cinema. And then in terms of the XY coordinate in the chromaticity diagram, it is actually extending the BT 2020 slightly. So
this one.
Yeah.
So you mean it's using BT 2020 now?
Right, but from our own measurements and comparing with BT 2020, the Jøvik cinema primaries or the gamut is even slightly bigger. It was just it was interesting to see.
Yes, so. Yes, that's because I think once I went to the Jøvik cinema and I saw that they are using the Dolby solutions in there, so which is basically a Dolby projector is right. Being used over there. I don't know. I didn't went inside and see it, but I could see some.
Right.
When it starts, I see Dolby stuff, so I thought maybe they are using the Dolby system there. So I think Dolby is at the front in terms of using, you know, HDR technologies or better color technologies, you know that. So, but also, you know that in because you are working in color management, so you know that issue very well. So we have two HDR screens, let's say, in our lab, and we have measured their gamut also last time, and they say that they have two input modes. For example, both of them has to follow BT2100. And then the input mode can be PQ or HLG, because in this standard they propose both of them. So if you change to but the color space though is the same for the color gamut is the same for both of them according to BT2100. But when we compare that with the standard primaries and the measure from the screen, in PQ mode, it's not actually the same, the gamut. So even the primaries shift. And as you said, the area of the gamut is also not the same. So it changes for HLG and PQ. Also with the standard primaries, it doesn't really correspond very well. So I would give it to the manufacturers. I think that's a problem. The manufacturers, I would say.
Right.
But, you know, it's always like that, so we will see that later. I mean, different devices, even though they are supposed to follow these standards, it doesn't exactly correspond to that standard primary if you measure it actually.
Okay, good.
But, okay. Yeah, so the same with other color imaging pipeline. So in HDR, we have these major components. So we will see them one by one. I will start from the acquisition process, and then we will see the image formats that we have in HDR and the current standards in HDR. And then finally, we will see the rendering side of the HDR imaging pipeline. So starting from the acquisition. So in the acquisition side, we will see actually three very important improvements that we have seen over the years. One is the sensor's sensitivity capability by itself. That means in the older standards, so the sensors, the CCD sensors or CMOS sensors were able, they were limited to only acquire up to 2 to 3 log units of dynamic range. But recently, the sensors themselves are improved to be able to acquire more than 3 log units. So they could even go up to 10 magnitude of dynamic range. But the other improvement is also the analog to digital converter, the quantization process. So even up to now, most conventional devices still use 8-bit encoding, but the high-end ones are having, most DSLR also are familiar with that, they are using more than 10-bit encoding. So the same thing then when we display it, and the display, because usually in the camera we have to save the image in the format that which is mostly in the display referred, so that would also limit the dynamic range. So, but that's also improved recently. So the main concept that I need to mention in this slide is that even though, you know, the luminance range which could be captured or acquired by a sensor is increased, that is the one, the main thing which will actually define the dynamic range of the acquired image or the dynamic range of the camera. The AD converter, I mean the bit depth, only actually tells the quality of storing or quantizing that value. So the higher, can you guys hear some noise? Or is it only me? Hello, Peter?
No, there is no noise. We can hear
There's
you.
There's no noise?
No, we can hear you very good. No noise okay. Here.
But give me 1 minute, I mean second. I'm sorry, there is some maintenance going on, so that have been disturbing me this morning.
Okay,
so if there is no noise, I will continue. So the main thing in this slide is that the bit depth is only defining the quantization step. What I mean by that is that, for example, how quantization works is that we have this luminance range, then we need to represent it with some integer or floating point or like discrete values in the digital domain. So we have the continuous signal, but we need to define it in discrete values. So how many bits we need to use for that? If we use 8 bits, that means we have a 8-bit integer, then we have only 8 discrete values, which means it could go 0 to 55. That, you know. But if we increase the bits, the bit depths to 16 bits, then we will have 16 discrete values. That means this range could be divided into 16 uniformly spaced integer values. So the error of representing this continuous signal into 16 to the power of 16 steps is much lower than representing this signal with 8 steps. So the quantization, which is the bit depth, is only defining the quality of acquiring that signal into discrete digital values. So you should know that. So usually people use the bit depth as a dynamic range, but that is really not correct, because if I want, I can even represent this range with only two bits, like with only 2^2, which is 0 to 3 values. So I can give this 1, 0, I can give here 1, I can give this 2. So I still have high dynamic range because as I told you before, dynamic range is the ratio between the maximum physical luminance, which is, because if we consider this as a real scene, this is the one captured by the camera. So at the sensor, everything above this will be overexposed, below this will be not sensed at all. So this is the luminance physical range that we are acquiring. So that is what we are measuring the dynamic range from, not the digital values after converted by the AD converter. So I just wanted to, show you things.
Very good. If I just might add another comparison, I come back to my very famous Italian salami. You know, if you have a salami which is one meter long, then if you talk about the bits, that means it is the slide sizes. So then if you divide 1 meter with 10 slices, then each slice is basically 10 centimeters. But if you divide it into 1,000, then you have a slide size of 1 millimeter.
Okay, it seems like I cannot remove it, but we can keep it, no problem.
Okay.
Yeah, so Peter is correct. Usually people give the salami example in this case. So it's the same thing, like in this case, in both ranges, you can decide how many bits you want to use to encode this data. But if we have large data like this, and then we want to encode it only with 8 bits, then we will start having a problem, because this 8-bit will have more quantization error than the 16 bits. So that quantization error will be actually visible in our HDR image or video as a quantization or as a contouring artifact, especially in the smooth areas of the scene. If you have a very limited bit depth and you have wide range of luminance, it would start to be visible as a contouring artifact in the image. So if you have longer dynamic range, then it's better to use high bit depth to avoid that kind of problems.
Okay,
I think my slide is stuck. Maybe I could restart it again. I'm sorry, I don't know what is happening.
So is the PowerPoint not moving?
Yeah, it's stuck. It's not moving. And I cannot also get out of the presentation mode.
Okay. So maybe you need to restart your machine, PC, then? So when you restart your computer, then I can get a cup of coffee quickly.
Okay, if you want, but I don't think it's you think it's from the restarting?
No, I mean if...
Okay, I think I need to, restart, because... Or I cannot even leave out of the meeting, the Zoom, so it's kind of freeze.
No, then we stay online and you reboot your system.
Okay.
And then we meet again in a couple of minutes.
Okay, good.
Good, see you then.
See you in a minute.
Yeah, I used to say USA is a development country.
Nick is not here, that's so unfortunate.
I did mute, you know. I have to be careful what I'm saying. I go for a cup of coffee now.
Thank you.
Okay, Makita, so you're back?
I'm making jokes.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, very good. So you want to continue?
Yes, okay. Okay, so is everything clear so far, everyone? Okay, so for HDR acquisition, so we can have a camera sensor which is capable of capturing high range of dynamic range, like this one. But compared to the CCD, we can see that how much of the light could be captured if we use the other sensor. So compared to our eye, also the sensor of this type of HDR sensors are really powerful. But even compared to CCD, even the older the film technology were capable of capturing longer range of dynamic range than some of the CCDs we have still now. So in this type of sensors, we can actually acquire HDR scene in just one single shot capture. So there are also other camera technologies which use spatial structure of sensors, which has demosaicing kind of concept. But on the sensor, they would have neighboring regions to capture different exposure levels of light, which would be like in one exposure coming from the sensor, coming from the optics of the camera. On the sensor, the same light can be acquired at different sensitivities. So later on, like a demosaicing process for RGB filters, this would also be fused together so that we can have some sort of well-exposed values than just a single sensor output. So this type of high-end devices are actually expensive at the moment if you want to buy it. So mainly only very highly qualified movie organizations or content creators would usually afford this kind of device at the moment. But another alternative to have HDR is to actually use the phones that we have right now. But as I already explained to you in this slide, so even if the luminance range that they can capture in one exposure is different, you can still vary the exposure level of that camera, and then we can capture different ranges of luminance levels in the scene. So by varying these camera settings, like the ISO for longer exposures to avoid noises, you can play with the ISO. And the shutter speed will also be useful to control the light level, how much light could come in. But the more, the longer shutter speed you have, the more light can come in. The same for aperture size. So by controlling these camera settings, you can actually vary different you can get different exposures of the same scene. So by combining these scenes for just the same example, like this one, but for another scene, so you can see that at the longer exposures, you can actually capture very bright regions of the scene, but you will have disadvantage of blurring, I mean, disadvantage of not able to capture the darker areas of the scene. But by changing the exposure level, you can actually still get details from the darker areas of the scene. So by weighted average of these exposures, which are actually captured in exponentially varying exposure values. But what I mean by weighted means that we need to weight, when we take the average of this image, we need to give a lower weight for pixels which have no information, no useful information whatsoever for us. So in this case, the darker region will have really low weight. It could be like zero because we don't need it to be incorporated in our final average image. So if we do this weighted average, finally we get a scene, an image like this, which will actually have details in both in the very bright highlight and also in the darker region of the image. So another misconception is that people might also refer this image as HDR, but as we discussed before, the definition of dynamic range as a ratio, if we calculate the ratio, I mean, because I am showing you here on the projector, we can actually measure with photo spectrophotometer what the luminance level in here and what the luminance level at the dark is on your projector, and see what is what the dynamic range this image has. That would be still limited, but the point is that we were able to get details both in the darker region and the bright highlight region. But if we compare the dynamic range of not this image, but the scene where it comes from, for example, if we measure the luminance of the scene at this light bulb, it will be pretty high. And then if we measure at the darker region, it will be pretty low. So the dynamic range of that scene was really high dynamic range, but not this image. But this image we can consider is usually in the industry, they refer it as HDR enhanced SDR image. So the image is still SDR because we are not saving it as HDR radiance values. It's still in SDR standard content, which is in sRGB still, but it is enhanced based on HDR techniques here. So you need to avoid the confusion that this is HDR, okay? So, but HDR, I cannot show you on this projector or on this screen because they are limited in luminance range. So we can apply the same techniques for video also, but because, you know, video is just like, let's say 60 or 24 frames per second, which is 24 images are captured in 1 second. But if we want to apply multi-exposure techniques for videos, that means for each frame, you need to get more exposure image. That means more frames in the video. So this is really, because of that, it's motion sensitive. So if you move your camera, usually if you use your hand, even if you didn't notice it, your hand is actually moving. So even that type of movement will need to error, which is basically introduced into the video as a ghosting artifact or some other misalignment artifacts in the video. So to avoid that, if you are using multi-exposure video acquisition, you need to have a tripod or you need to do some post-processing to to remove basically the ghosting artifacts or the misalignment problems happen because of the movement. Because even if you are using tripod, the objects in the scene might be moving. So even that movement will create those artifacts. So, but usually it's very challenging to avoid that in moving in movie creation. So for video content creators, they have to come up with another solution, which is more error-free than multi-exposure techniques. So one alternative is spatial bracketing, which they use a mirror to actually split the light, which is coming from the scene, and they would have to use two cameras. One camera will be in some other exposure setting, the other one would be in another exposure setting, and then at the end, the outputs of the two cameras has to be aligned or synchronized. So the registration of these two cameras should be actually very accurate, otherwise there would be a misalignment problem over there also. But this is better because you can capture the scene in just one shot. So both cameras are capturing in one shot. They don't need multiple exposure in this case. The other alternative is you can actually capture, you can have the LDR image, which is using your normal camera, phone camera, for example. And then you can apply reverse tone mapping, or you can expand the dynamic range of that image and create the HDR version of it. So we will see that later. I will give more introduction to that later. So another alternative is that for the scenes, doesn't have to be always captured by a camera. There is a computer graphics domain where you can actually create your scene. But these days there are graphics tools which can actually create very realistic scenes based on the physically based rendering. So most of these tools actually are capable of creating HDR scenes in EXR format. So, for example, in animation movie industries and also gaming industry are using HDR a lot. I mean, I could say that at the moment the HDR is really being applied in these two domains, in animation and also in gaming industry. That's because it's not a device limited, you know. You can actually create HDR scene using the graphics tools. Yeah, so this is on the acquisition. So once we acquire the HDR Radiant scenes, how can we store them? So before I have introduced about the bit dubs and all that related issues. So before I go to HDR formats, I would like to tell you that the structure of the file for every image. So this structure is not actually only it's not only for image, it's also, Hello, Peter, can you hear me?
Now I can hear you again.
I am really sorry, I am shouting so that you can hear me because there is some noise outside. But I hope the noise is not disturbing you as well.
Yeah, in between we can hear some noise, but it's still okay.
I try to be very loud, so, and then my throat is getting dry, so sorry for the interruption.
No, we are able to follow. That's fine.
Okay, so the all image file formats are they actually follow this structure, so they have two sections. The first you find in the file is that image header, and then after that it comes the image data. So in the header, in the beginning, the first line, they usually provide what type of image it is. Is it the .xr, is it .png, is it JPEG? So they will tell you that information in the first line, and then the metadata will come later, which is usually have the description of the image. So for imaging application, usually the metadata will have like a lookup table for color management purposes. It will have the size of the image, and then also the, if it is like EXIF metadata, it has a lots of information on white point, on the color gamut of the camera it's captured with, the time, the date, the place, the location, and things like that. You can even, sometimes the metadata can be also empty, that means no metadata, for example. And then it comes the image data. The image data is actually the values, intensity values of each pixel in the image. So it could be represented in integer or floating point numbers. But the numbers exactly might not be given as they are. There might be a compression applied on that. So it will be like a RAN language encoding or wavelet encoding or some other compression encoding would be applied on it. So this would be the encoder side when we create image. But then in the screen side or the printer side, when you want to display or print it, then you have to reinterpret this image depending on the file extension, and then the compression applied to it, and everything will be known based on the extension. So you will reapply that to recover the real RGB or the real intensity values of the image, and then you convert that in integer values into continuous signal to a display signal or print signal so that you get the output. So this is the file structure. So for HDR, we have three well-known formats, which is .hdr, .exr are the two known formats, but the TIFF is kind of a many-purpose file format, I would say. So usually the camera raw files are also saved in TIFF, because it is actually has the TIFF has like the log NUV, or it could be 32 bits, 24 bits, or the IEEE RGB, which is usually used for raw values, I think. So as you can see here, the bit depth is really high, so the capability of this encoding of bit depth is high. That's why raw images are usually saved in TIFF. Even though the camera analog to digital converter usually have lower bit depths, but because of the encoding's capability, you can still use this TIFF format. So for HDR also, we use TIFF usually in the log NUV encoding. So for this encodings, the difference, as you can see here, is that the color space they use to save the image into, and then the bit depth they allocate for those values. So basically more, if you see here with sRGB, the standard, which is the standard color space, you could see that the dynamic range capability of, the maximum dynamic range values we can save with this 24 bits or sRGB is at 1.6 or magnitude of log magnitude orders. So you could see the huge difference between the different encodings compared to SRJ. But so this is all related with, you know, how are we going to save this one, so the sRGB data. Should it be an integer? I mean, the image, the pixel data, should it be an integer or floating point? If it is a floating point, for example, in case of RGBE format, we can still have RGB values, so it's in RGB space, but is it integer? No, it's a floating point RGB representation, but this E is for basically for the exponent, because they will convert the floating point into exponential format. And then, for example, if I have a value of 7 times 10 to the power of minus 3, for example, this is a 0.007, something like that. So they will save this one as RGB normal RGB file value with 8 bits. Can you see what I am writing, Peter?
Yeah, 7 times 10 exponent minus 3.
So this RGB part is for this, I don't know what we call Mantissa, or so for that component. That can be represented by 8-bit each RGB. So we will have 24 bits for this. But for the exponent part, which means for this one, we will have another 8 bits. So altogether, we have 32 bits representation for RGBE. So that is how they encode the floating point pixel values of the HDR image. The same for XYZ, for log LEV, also another type of encoding. For the detailed description of these formats, the Reinhardt's book, I gave the reference here, also at the end of the slide. There is a Banterle book, I also provided that at the back. So you can read that for a detailed explanation of that. But recently, you can probably see these terms frequently used, like these are like standard formats right now, HDR10, HDR10 plus, especially if you have a movie, TV screen at home with HDR support, you might hear these terms like HLG10, Dolby Vision. These are all standard HDR formats, but proposed by different industries, different manufacturers, I could say. For example, HLG10 is, I think, BBC introduced this. And Dolby Vision is by Dolby. And I think HDR10 Plus is also by Dolby. But HDR10, I don't really know who proposed this. Maybe Technicolor, BBC, something like that, but it's open, it's the only open source we have. But these two are also, they are also relatively free, but the copyright is still with proposed organizations. So these are also, if you want to know the detail in this formats, you can actually read the corresponding standard standard specification documents. But the difference is that now this follow the new BT2100 recommendations. So they use either the PQ or the HLG transfer function. But the color primaries, for HDR10 is BT2100, but the rest still use a BT2020. I would assume this is still for compatibility, backward compatibility purposes. As you can see here, the bit depth is also different. But the one more good difference to notice is that the PQ function is actually capable of encoding values up to 10,000 candela per meter square. So if you use PQ, you have the capability of using display screens up to that candela per meter square. But HLG is need that values to be tone mapped or reduced to 1,000 candela per meter square. The other point that I need to mention here is that the metadata, because I mean, I will talk later on color management, metadata is very important for interoperability of devices. So it could be a static or it could be dynamic metadata. So especially this dynamic concept is introduced in HDR, after HDR is introduced, because the Dolby Vision especially, they wanted to have different dynamic range depending on the scenes which are presented on. For example, in one movie, not all scenes are HDR. So for when they're streaming or when they broadcast the movie, they don't want to use HDR for all the scenes. That would be like a wastage of power, for example. So they wanted to have a dynamic metadata in each frame, which then they would tell the decoder on the screen that on this frame, I want it to be HDR. So something like that. So for that purpose, they have a dynamic metadata than a static. The static metadata means the metadata of every frame in the scene is the same. It doesn't change depending on the frame. So these are the new and popular formats. So, but what we have noticed is that because there are many standards and they are coming from different organizations, it is very confusing for the consumer at the moment. So because I think the commercial politics or something, you could say that not all digital camera manufacturers support all of this format. Some might support one and not support the other. The same for in the display manufacturers and also like streaming service providers or broadcasters. So if you have one, let's say LG TV, and your content is in Dolby Vision, then you're not actually looking at HDR content. You just have a bright screen in your home, but you're not actually looking at a proper HDR content. So if you want to see proper HDR content, then you need to find the service providers which actually support LG screens or which LG screen actually support. So it could be maybe, I don't know, Netflix. So you have to, it's just, I mentioned this point always because right now, not everyone supports everything, but it's coming. Like I could see that especially on the display side, they start supporting all of them, but the content providers doesn't actually, yeah. So you have to be careful what screen you have and what content you are using. So I've been mentioning about standards so far. So there have been a lot of standards, as me and Peter said that there have been a BT709, which is like the older standard, which is still at work, by the way. So when we say sRGB, so we are referring to BT709. Then for UHD, we have BT2020, now for HDR, BT2100. So these standards are just nothing, they're just a recommendation of different specifications of the image or the video should be encoded into. So they will tell you the color space, the primaries for specifying the gamut, and they will tell you the conversion function, opto-electronic transfer function, for if this is in this case for a camera, if it is electro-opto transfer function, which is for display, which is from electronic signal to optical signal conversion function, and from optical signal to electronic signal conversion function. So the PQ and HLG are actually OETF, or EOTF functions. So for both cases, even OOTF like that, which is from optical physical signal to optical display signal conversion. So all these type of functions for PQ case, HLG case, what should you do, what steps you need to follow to have a proper content, a standard content, would be including the bit dubs, and everything would be explained in these standards. So there are different standards depending on the application. There's CIE, there's IQ, there's ISO, there is also SMTE. There are different standard organizations, international organizations, which will actually provide this kind of standards for the consumer, for manufacturing and also content creators. This is all to have, good interoperability between them. So it really matters if we follow the standards on or not, because color in different color spaces represents differently, and the appearance also changes with that. So it's really important to have a common standard so that we have a good color reproduction throughout the pipeline. So this is just one example of showing you, starting from capturing up to the PQ signal, HLG signal, which steps we need to follow. Yes, Peter, did you say something?
No.
Okay. So, in addition to the main standards, there will be a supporting standards which will actually show you how to do, the conversion, let's say, between PQ encoded image and sRGB encoded image. sRGB to PQ, PQ to sRGB. Or sRGB to HLG, HLG to sRGB. So this kind of conversion might not be clear. So this standard organization can actually also provide more supporting documents for content creators or manufacturers to show that what type of steps they need to follow. So I have actually provided more references at the end, some standards, standard documents like that. So, once we have the image in a proper format, and then later on we wanted to print it or we wanted to display it on the screen, that would be like the rendering process of the HDR imaging pipeline. So, in HDR, it's a bit, we have more scenarios than when it was LDR contents and LDR screens or LDR printers. Now we have HDR contents. We also have HDR screens in most people's home. So the scenario will be if someone has, like, the content is created in HDR, the movie is streaming in HDR, or the game is in HDR. So how can I use my LDR screen, laptop screen, to play that game? And also, if I have the old contents, like most of the contents in archiving right now, most of the contents on YouTube, for example, are actually created with LDR cameras. So we have a huge amount of LDR contents at the moment in archive. And also, still we are utilizing LDR acquisition devices, so LDR still will be here for a long time. So, but then, what if I want to display that on my HDR display? So we have these four scenarios, HDR to HDR, or could be also displayed on LDR, LDR to HDR, or LDR could be directly seen on LDR displays following the conventional standard. So the first case will be HDR to LDR, because HDR standard, if I have a PQ encoded content and I have a PQ screen, input mode PQ, I can directly see the PQ content. I mean, the display should work like that, the encoder. But if I have LDR display, then I need one more step, which is called tone mapping, because the HDR has a high dynamic range radiance values. So we need to somehow compress it so that it could be visible on this screen. But the HDR content, the real HDR content, we cannot show it on this projector. So usually what people do is they generate this kind of a heat map, the luminance range heat map. So the red is actually a high luminance range. And when it goes to the blue, darker blue, it will be lower luminance range. So I can either linearly compress it with like a minimax normalization, and it will look like this, which is because this luminance is really high, the luminance level here is really high, all the other intensity values will be really pushed to the low intensity level. So basically that would be so if I have the input, so I am compressing it linearly like this. So this is up to 10,000. This is only 255. So, or like if we are talking about luminance only, so 100 candela per meter square. So if it is linear compression, so what I'm doing is, this is because this is really high, so the maximum, this would be corresponds to the 100, let's say, but all the other intensity values will lie to really this range, the lower range. So it will look like really dark in our rendering. But what we would like to do is actually to keep the intensity values of most of the scenes like this, but I would much rather want to clip in this area than compressing this more. So we can make the compression actually more content based or more content aware. So one example would be if I do a gamma like this, then the mid levels up to here would be preserved, but the maximums are somehow compressed more. You know, the higher intensities are compressed more. So this type of tone mapping can actually give me this result. Another function I could do is that I could do something, so I can compress more in this region and I keep this once, and I compress more in the dark region also. So this is what we call a sigmoidal function. So this is mostly used in most of the tone mapping operators that we have at the moment. So bright highlight regions will be clipped more, and very dark regions will also be clipped more. Then I will have more space, more intensity luminance values of in the limited range to represent the mid labels at AR. So that will give me actually a proper rendering of the HDR content on a limited dynamic range screens or prints. But so the sigmoidal the sigmoidal functions are actually came from the how the photoreceptor in our human vision, in our retina, is sensitive to light. So most of the tone mapping operators are actually inspired by the human photoreceptor. Even more complicated tone mapping methods kind of simulate the whole visual system, starting from, you know, accommodation, which is the opening of pupil and the compression, the closing and opening of the pupil, starting from that up to the photoreceptor sensitivities. So in general, these models are based on the background intensity, because usually the human sensitivity to light is not only from the stimuli, it also depends on the background intensity. So how they compute this background intensity in their operator, in their tone mapping operators, actually could be used to define or split the tone mapping operators which are available at the moment into global operators or local operators. So the global are mainly like if we have the image, for calculating the tone map HDR value of this pixel intensity, they would actually, so this would be the intensity of this pixel would be I, but the IB will be the intensity of the background. So for global methods, what is the background is actually the average of the intensity values of the whole pixel in the image. Could be as a arithmetic mean or geometric mean. I mean, depending on the method, the proposed method, they might prefer different way of averaging. But the background is the average of all the pixels. That's why we call them a global method. So that means we are applying the same formula for all pixels in the image, because the IB is the same everywhere. But for local methods, for calculating the tone map value of this pixel, the background is only calculated from the pixels in the neighboring region. That's really local. So this window will move. So for every pixel, we are only considering that window of pixels, the neighboring pixels to calculate, consider as a background. So this is why we call them local methods. So there are actually so many tone mapping operators proposed so far. So the books, actually, the Banterlay and Eric Reinhardt's book has all lists of tone mapping operators. Even in the Banterlay's book, he even have a MATLAB code for you to implement those tone mapping operators. So I would recommend for you to read that book. So it is just that the advantage of having local operators is that they are more effective in enhancing contrast than the global operators. So the global operators are more efficient for implementation in terms of computational terms, computational efficiency, but the result is not high contrasted as the local methods. The local methods could be computationally expensive compared to the global methods. So the other scenario that we will see in this lecture will be if we have LDR contents, but I have HDR screen, then I, because this is a limited dynamic range, I can still directly display it on this HDR screen because it is, it has higher capabilities than the image I have, but it will be like a wastage of space in here, dynamic range space. So I can actually enhance the content of this LDR content or expand the dynamic range so that I can use the full capability of this display screen. So that is where the inverse tone mapping operators come into play. But one point raised in Banterle's book is that he doesn't want to call them reverse tone mapping because we're not technically inverting tone mapping operators. So for example, I can give the previous example that if, for example, I-out is calculated from I the power of gamma, the gamma tone mapping, so maybe I should call this one LDR. So from the HDR, we tone mapped it with gamma tone mapping operator and we have the LDR. If this LDR is this content, and now I want to see it in HDR, so I want to go back to its HDR version, then what I can do is IHDR is equal to ILDR 1 over gamma, which is the inverse of the gamma operator that I have applied earlier. So in this scenario, we can actually literally call it inverse tone mapping because I am applying the inverse of the tone mapping operator. But in most of the cases, we don't even know what the tone mapping was, which was applied for on the LDR content. Or as I told you before, the camera is limited. So because of that, we have LDR content. Or the standard is sRGB, let's say. So because of the standard, we have LDR content. But yeah, in sRGB, we know that for other purposes, we know there's a gamma encoding. So to go to linear space, we apply inverse gamma, which of 2.2, which is a standard. Or I think, is it 2.4? I think, I don't know, 2.2 or 2.4. So, but that is, that has something else to do than tone mapping. So it is maybe not right to call every method inverse tone mapping unless it is literally inverting the tone mapping operator. So it's better to call them expansion, dynamic range expansion method. So just like the tone mapping methods, dynamic range expansion could be, for example, the gamma example I just gave is if the gamma is greater than less than one, it could be a tone mapping operator. But if it is greater than one, it could be an expansion operator. Or as I explained before, gamma could be one, so we can just do min max stretching of the dynamic range. Which usually give actually more preferred results than all the other tone mapping methods. It's not the same like the tone mapping. In reverse tone mapping, people usually prefer the linear stretching of the dynamic range than any other complex methods like this. Because usually methods like LDR to HDR, because of the post-processing or like filtering, applying and trying to enhance or bring back details in the exposed, overexposed regions, usually might end up creating artifacts or unnecessary or unrealistic results. Then people don't prefer this, so they would just prefer linear enhancement sometimes. not all the time, sometimes.
I do have a question, Makidis. So,
yeah.
Commercially, who is actually determining what kind of tone mapping method is applied for an end user? Or do you understand my question?
For B2-2100, I will actually give, at the end of the slide, I have provided one other ITU standard, which will actually recommend what type of tone mapping should be done for PQ to get to sRGB. Because, you know, if we are talking about commercial, we need to talk about the standards. But, you know, when it was SDR, every manufacturer was in agreement with it. Manufacturer, content creators, broadcasting companies, they were all in agreement with it.
Okay.
So they know what they need to do, right? So for the screen provider, they would sell more if they show that they follow the standard. So they will sell, they will say that, oh, our screen actually is based on sRGB. Then, because I know that sRGB is the one used in the production, so I would buy that. So because of this agreement, it was really okay until the introduction of HDR devices and contents. And now we are very in the very early stages of that consensus, I would say. Companies are still fighting to each other to push their own products or their own patents to be the standard, you know.
Sure.
Because as I mentioned before, I was saying some are reality free, some are not. So, for example, if Dolby Vision is accepted to be the general standard, then they will be financially profitable for them. Because everybody has to pay them to use their product, their patent. So because of that, there is a huge, you know, then finally the standard organization, let's say ITU, for example, they couldn't really finally choose one. That's why they proposed both PQ and HLG, because the politics was really hard. They couldn't come into agreement.
Right.
So they have proposed both. And then the industry start still coming with another standard format like HDR10 and still using these two, these two recommendation of EOTFs, but, you know, different version of metadata and blah, blah. So they have different version of their own now. So, you know, now it's a headache on the consumer.
It reminds me a little bit about different CMMs. So
color management is going to be a headache because now we have to handle all these formats and all these types of EOTFs and color spaces, and because there is no one single standard now for HDR.
Yeah.
So if you really want to incorporate all the contents to work seamlessly like sRGB used to, then you need to have all of them.
No, but I think this is very exciting, you know, and looking at this young new cohort of new COSI students. So there is still plenty of work and projects. So we are not at the end, or we have not reached the sky yet. Please go ahead. Please go ahead with your presentation.
Okay. So yeah, this in HDR domain, I would say that it's just the beginning, especially in the color management, from color management point of view, it's a beginning, I would say. So the operators in HDR, most of the time, the simple one, the global ones are this type. So basically, they will have some threshold to identify the specular highlights in the scene. And then those highlight regions would be boosted with separate increasing function, while keeping the remain of the image to be linearly expanded. So usually this kind of reverse tone mapping or expansion operators are preferable. But in my experience, in my PhD, I have worked on overexposure and color clipping correction. I have noticed that rather than just boosting, you know, intensity values like this, I mean, just boosting the luminance range, it's better first if we enhance the color clipping or overexposure happening in the image, and then we expand the dynamic range. That really is useful to create in color appearance terms, more accurate, and also in preference cases, more preferred rendering of LDR contents onto HDR image. So there have been, because of that, there have been so many color clipping and overexposure correction methods, which have been proposed even before my PhD. For example, in this case, you can just apply in painting, because this is the same area around. You can just in paint this color in here, and you get you recover the lost details because of overexposure. But in some cases, it might be just one channel clipping, or just it was supposed to be blue, but it's cyan now. In this case, the same thing because of the clipping in one color channel. Then you can recover that with the processings like this in more of luminance chromatic channel like LAB or YCDCR kind of spaces. It's very easy to see if you plot the pixels of this kind of clipped regions.
Yeah, there are some echo.
Hello, Peter.
Hello. Hello, I'm still here. But now it's really a mess.
Yeah, I mean, I hear back a lot of voices.
Hello, I'm still here.
Okay.
But now it's really a mess. Trudy, you want to give another try to restart?
So is it from me?
Yeah, I don't know.
You want to give another try to restart?